Hello, faithful listeners. Welcome to episode 78 of Doctor Who Target Files, the first of our regular run following the preview of season 11 specials. Let's have a little cheer, Alex. Doctor Who is back on TV. Hooray!
Hey! Hi, this is Alex in Exeter.
And this is Mike in Swansea. Discussing today the season premiere, first episode for Jodie Whittaker's Doctor and Chris Chibnall as showrunner, The Woman Who Fell to Earth, directed by Jamie Childs. A teaser for your thoughts, please, Alex.
Oh, where do we start? I luckily just got back, because I was out Sunday, and I just got back the minute it started, and it was just brilliant. I don't know what to say. It just didn't begin with feel like a Doctor Who episode. It just got better and better and better, and I really loved it.
Overall, I loved it too. A few little niggling issues. You know, we spoke in the preview show about The Power of Three and the fact I didn't like the slow build-up of that story. I thought this was similar early on in some respects, although the greater intrigue of brand new characters was there. Gathered a good bit of pace towards the end, and lots of intricacies. All the strengths of Chibnall, as we talked about in the preview show, all the strengths of his Broadchurch great intrigue within the plot. Possibly scaled back a bit in epicness and pace from something like The 11th Hour in the Moffat era, but overall, just the fresh start this show desperately needed.
I think so. I know a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter said it would have been better maybe if it wasn't an hour. Well, I think it worked really well because it's all built up really nicely. You know, you sort of got to meet the Ryan and and Graham's sort of family unit really quickly, and you saw them work really well. And I thought it built nicely, and then you sort of saw something I felt was a little bit based on the cubes from Power 3, but then it sort of expanded into a really more interesting monster, and then you got the Doctor coming. It just really worked. I think the pacing, actually, that was a bit slow, but it was a sort of pacing I think you needed to bring everything right into the, sort of speed of the episode at the end, really.
Yes, we could have had a total rip-off of The 11th Hour pace-wise, couldn't we? But he really just has almost condensed the sort of intricate season he put into Broadchurch, 8 episodes, into this first hour, I felt, in setting up the characters, not giving too much away about them, but just enough to show it in a very sort of grounded Sheffield.
Yeah, I think so, because you got to know those sort of really major characters very quickly. You know, you got to know Ryan, you got to know Yaz, and you got to know, Graham's character and, his wife, really quickly, and then he sort of built on bits and you found out more about them. That sort of whole way you met Ryan through a sort of web video and about his, dyspraxia and about his grandparents are trying to teach him to still to cycle, and it's sort of really cleverly done. And I thought, that's why when you start watching this episode, you don't really think it's a Doctor Who episode. You think this is like a drama until you get to, all the monsters and the Doctor kicking in. I thought it was, looked really nicely like a Chris Chibnall drama more than a Doctor Who episode.
Do you think the absence of the opening titles worked and it added to that sense of drama, as you just explained?
Yeah, I think it did, actually. I think it would have, if you'd had, opening credits when, the Doctor, he's on the train and sort of stuns the alien, maybe have it there, then that might have sort of broken down the pace of what was happening. So I think it was a good thing not to have the credits, and I think it was rather clever when you did see the Doctor to have that lovely first bit of of the sort of Doctor Who theme tune just sort of slightly mentioned there. And I think it worked. I think the credits would have broken the pace down.
Yeah, sort of electronic beat as she fell through the roof of the train. Been a little bit of criticism online, as there always will be, as to how the Doctor didn't appear injured. We didn't get an explanation for her regeneration. Perhaps being in the early stages, allowing her to go through that pain barrier of falling from a vast distance to the, to the floor of the moving train.
It didn't really bother me, to be honest. What I can see, people always made about, but I think there was, elements of the sort of the regeneration when she passes out and, as he's lying on the sofa and you get to see the, whole body get covered in regeneration energy, and I thought those bits worked really well. And I just don't think you needed it, because, you were more concerned with her as the Doctor. You were more concerned of her dealing with that alien, really. Those sort of things really didn't take you into that sort of conversation, I think, of feeling, oh, why is he doing this? Why is he, you know, doesn't he feel pain because of the regen? I don't think it was really needed.
She went from strength to strength without to put plenty of her own confidence and stamp on the role straight away.
Oh, it's just stunning. It's just so stunning. It didn't, you know, she just sort of drops in, and from the minute there, though, it's just lovely little details, you know, like having pockets and no Sonic and all the sort of, the way she sort of gets to know, you know, Yaz and, you know, Ryan and Gray and all, it's all very quickly done and really gives you more about their characters, gives, you know, the funness. And I just think it built and built, and then you got the whole building of the Sonic screwdriver, which was really, I just think she is, there might be bits where she could improve, but for first episode, I thought it was stunning. I think it's actually better than the 11th hour in some bits.
Yeah, totally different tonal shift, really, Al. Character-wise, interesting, we started off on Ryan. We found out, as you just mentioned, a lot about his character quite early on. The fact that he couldn't ride the bike due to the condition dyspraxia he appears to have. And very interesting sort of subtle reference to his perhaps somewhat troubled relationship with Gray and Bradley Walsh's character, as he refuses to call him Granddad when Grace the grandmother does.
Yeah, there's lots of interesting things about all the companions. You learn, well, friends isn't meant to call them, can't really call them companions, they're meant to be friends. But I think there's lots of interesting things you learn out pretty quickly. You learn lots about Ryan, you know, about being dyspraxic, having the bicycle. You learn stuff about Yaz being, you know, a policewoman, that, and then Graham having cancer and beating it, and, you know, how he meets his wife Grace. So I think there's lots of stuff really cleverly packed into not a great time length of those, you finding out those bits.
No, interesting you said about the terminology for her group. The Doctor, she actually mentions herself on the train, doesn't she? What do I say? Gang, crew? And then she sort of changes the subject, as the Doctors always have done on the Sixpence down the years.
Yeah, there's that whole bit, you know, where she's going, oh, do I call you frat, fat, even fans, you know, I'm a group, because it's so many of them. Well, I think the thing that works really well is if we had, because we had the problems with the Peter Davison era, where he had companions, and there was time when he didn't know what to do, and I think because of Chris Chibnall's writing, they didn't feel like, you know, they didn't work together. There was, you know, sort of, they were all together all the time, and I think that worked really well.
Yaz had a very sort of forceful, authoritative, assertive entrance into the show, didn't she? Sorting out a domestic dispute over parking. And a few fans have noticed online there was a bit of a reminiscence of when this issue argument is going on about the parking, there happens to be a hammer stuck through the windscreen of a car. And that's very reminiscent of Ian Levine back in the 80s. A famous picture of him smashing a TV set up when Doctor Who was taken off the air, of course, and fans have picked up on that.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. Maybe a little bit when she's hammering out the Sonic screwdriver as well. There are little elements, I think, there.
Yeah, that was very John Pertwee, wasn't it? Just putting it all together from bric-a-brac, and then at the very end, the teleport device. She came up with the whole idea of it being on the old dial-style microwave timer.
Yeah, there was some really lovely sort of, you know, bits that, on, you know, I can still put anything together, and that beautiful way they shot making the Sonic screwdriver. I know it's going to get complaints with what it looks like, but I think it looks stunning. That the sort of the way the orange crystal at the end looked on a 4K picture, it looks stunning, and just that whole Pertwee sort of thing, I can put them together and make something beautiful, really.
Talk a bit about Jamie Chiles directing, some fantastic cinematography as well. I did feel, I wrote down in my notes, that the landscape never really encroached on the characters, but he managed to get that balance between the characterisation and the epic scale of some of the shots, particularly the ending of the Tim Shaw character in the industrial estate with the cranes. That was very reminiscent of a lot of 1980s films I can remember, 1990s, perhaps something like Terminator 2 with the cranes, even something like Three Men and a Baby, some of the Lethal Weapon films, all set at night within these industrial yards with cranes.
Yeah, the cinematography is just being sort of jumped 100 levels in the sort of new episodes. There's little bits like at the beginning when you're sort of on the countryside shuffle, and it looks absolutely stunning. I think the countryside should look that great on TV, personally. But yeah, the great thing with the cranes at the end was really sort of quite good fun, and apparently she did all her own stunts, Joe did, for all those bits, apparently. But it's just like, you know, it does remind me, like you, I watched all these sort of films, and it reminded me a lot of those sort of big action scene at the end of, you got Lethal Weapons, or, you know, like you were saying, Terminator. It did feel epic. It didn't feel small budget TV any longer. I think, you know, the pace has been, increased, and budgets obviously been increased, trying to keep up with things you get on Netflix, Amazon Prime, having to be that good, I think, has improved it, really.
Yes, and Jodie herself interviewed at New York Comic Con over the weekend, saying it was 4 o'clock in the morning on a freezing morning, she was trying to look tough at the doctor, but inside I was bricking it, she was saying.
Yeah, I've seen that as well, I think you would, but those cranes look mammoth.
Yes, Al, characters-wise again, on to Graham. I thought Bradley Walsh played him as a bit more subdued than I thought, although I think we will see more development over the course of the series. Perhaps I was expecting him to be a more like a Wilf sort of Bernard Cribbins character, but he did have a bit of a issue with Ryan, at times being a bit harsh on him, mentioning about the dyspraxia when Ryan thinks he's made the mistake of allowing the alien to have access to Earth.
I think it was a bit more subtle than people think, he can be, and I think it worked really well. Those sort of character bits got better and better, and I know there's, sort of he's put all his own little details on, because everybody's picked out he's wearing a West Ham scarf for most of it, and but I thought he was really good. He was better than I thought he was going to be, personally, because I haven't seen him in much of his acting stuff, but I've always thought him a bit, not the greatest actor. I really enjoyed his characters. I thought he was comedic when he needed to be, and sort of quite good with the whole spoiler coming funeral bit at the end. I thought that really worked, really.
Did wonder whether there were a few too many characters, Al. We had the gentleman mechanic whose sister had been abducted, which had been part of this alien invasion, the idea of the slow invasion you referenced from The Power of Three?
Yeah, I do think there was maybe a few many too many characters. I do agree. I think it could have been timed down a bit. Well, I think it's the whole having to fill an hour episode, and I think the 55-minute episodes will be better because they have to be tighter, but I think, there was characters who were just there to be ate by monsters, really, as you just said there, I think. And I did think this was, that though it's a new monster, that monster worked really well.
Yeah, I don't think the finest BAFTA-winning performance by the drunk man throwing the salad at Tim Shaw the alien, to be honest.
that bit could have gone as well. That was a bit weird, that one. I know, I think it was on Breakfast this morning, people were going on about, why would you do that in Sheffield? Why don't people like salad then? And they were on about that.
Well, that's what they say about us in Wales and the North. We don't have a very healthy diet, really.
I know. I do agree. Those sort of bits there, I think, were just put in for sort of scaring, seeing a monster eat somebody, basically.
But I just love that use of humour with the alien name. Jodie, mentioning, Tim Shaw, that's Doctor Who's the only sort of story you could get that eccentricity in.
I know, he just works so well, because she just keeps repeating it, he doesn't get it at all, it's hilarious.
And I did tweet shortly afterwards, I wonder if there's somebody called Tim Shaw who has really annoyed Chris Chibnall in life.
It has to be something like that for him to drop it in there, I reckon.
Perhaps that was his second choice, as he thought. Calling them the Pip and Jane Bakers might have been a little bit too subtle.
Yes, maybe. I think we would have got that, but I don't think many people would have done.
We have to mention Grace as well. Interesting that she's advertised as a recurring character in the series, so it'll be interesting to see just when and how she reappears again, unless that was a red herring to keep this big shock of spoiler in the first place.
Well, I was wondering that, because like you, I saw Sharon D. Clarke's character was meant to be recurring, and then we can't really say, but something happens in episode one, and how can she recur? Unless there's a back in time episode or something, maybe.
Well, someone spoilers, folks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Spoilers. Has noticed a publicity shot was taken around about the cranes within the industrial estate, with Jodie actually wearing her what is now regular costume, whereas she only had Peter Capaldi's scalded costume on in the actual episode, so perhaps you're right there, Al. Perhaps there will be a bit of a Back to the Future 2 hanging around in the background.
When she got the costume, did you actually see her in the full costume? When she's in the change room, did she actually come out in the full costume?
I think she had the jacket on as well. I can't actually remember now.
Yeah, because on the audio, I'm going to say this now, this is one thing that annoyed me, on the audio description for Doctor Who episode, they didn't say what she came out in, so I knew anyway, but it was like, what are you not saying?
Sure, again, should we talk a little bit about Tim Shaw again, the wonderful designer?
Oh, that is beautiful, like the designer Tim Shaw. He's a sort of very creepy alien who likes to keep the teeth of his victims, so it looked lovely. No, not lovely, it looked horrible, really, but, it did look rather creepy and nasty.
Yes, and denouement-wise, how do you feel Jodie coped with the, mild speech compared to something like Matt Smith in The 11th Hour and the David Tennant Christmas Invasion, and I'm sure there's more sort of epic speeches to come, although this incarnation of the Doctor and the actual tone of the programme itself does seem to have peeled back on the idea of I am the Doctor, I am a wonderful lonely God type thing, and we're going to see more of a ensemble piece.
Yeah, I think so. I think that bit at the end is very good with her, and I think she, you know, allows them to come along and that. But I think we're not going to have big speeches this time. I think we're just going to have very quick, big things. What, you know, she says a lot and not a lot, if you see what I mean. She sort of gets to the point quicker, and I think she does that really well.
Yeah, just getting to the moment now, Al, on the recording. Yeah, she had the full costume on.
She did that. That's so annoying, because they didn't tell on the audio description that she had the full. I knew she had, but they didn't say a word. But, you know, like, she comes out of the change room in that. No, they just didn't say anything, so I wondered, that's all.
No, but the charity shot was a very good touch.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
Moving up towards the ending, what a cliffhanger, I thought. So well shot. And as we mentioned earlier on, the idea of the Pertwee-esque cobbling together a teleport in this instant, wasn't it?
Yeah, sort of a teleport box, what should hopefully get her to her TARDIS. But yes, and then we have the cliffhanger of you just seeing them all hanging in space, which I expect will connect to next week's episode, I expect.
But did you notice the Doctor and Yaz and Graham were okay, but it was only Ryan who was going for his throat, like the oxygen was going out of him, so I don't know if they're protected somewhat, the other three.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting one, because I just get this feeling that, you know, they're going to use Ryan maybe for more the dramatic drama things, maybe, because the Doctor does seem to talk to him more and then goes on more of his hunches than the rest, I think, at the moment. That's what I felt from this episode.
Yes, what a fantastic cliffhanger. I think it's already an iconic moment in Doctor Who, to be honest, the way it was shot with Jodie's hair sort of sticking up in space. And the whole sort of bombast of using the brass, sudden brass beat, wasn't it, of the music?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful shot, that is, with them all sort of standing in space, and where's the TARDIS sort of looking, not knowing what's going to happen next, really, and then that rather, I'm going to say rather good, because I'm still, it's growing on me, it's rather good, new Doctor Who theme tune.
It did, it took me a while, it probably took me the extended version as we saw it broadcast up to the Coming Soon trailer, where it really started to kick in for me. What it did remind me of, it's very heavy on percussion now, it's very similar of the one-off we got on the end credits of the 50th anniversary, but that was more orchestral, but it did lead with the drum beats, and this one does that, but it also has huge elements of the original Derbyshire theme, Grainer theme.
Yeah, it's sort of a mixture of lots of deep bass, for how the best way of describing it, with then it goes into the very weird orchestral sort of method of the original, you know, 1963 sort of Doctor Who theme in the original one, which is beautiful. But I just think it's a grow. I definitely think I would like it probably by episode 2 or 3. It's just I wasn't used to it, that's all.
Yes, and the dramatic incidental music was very reminiscent of Broadchurch, I thought, although that was a gentleman. Is he a Swedish or Danish Scandinavian gentleman called Olaf something?
He is Danish, the guy who did Broadchurch. It was reminding me a lot of more sort of orchestral sort of dance things, like the in a couple of people in Britain, the group called The Orb, and also Orbital. It was reminding me, it was very sort of, I think, even slightly Vangelis in some points. It sort of reminded me a lot of, I think the way it was shot as well, it reminded me a lot of the original Blade Runner. They're sort of chilled out and sort of, you know, making you feel alike for the countryside in the first bits, and sort of very pacey in the end, I think.
Yes, sort of criticisms-wise, Al, we did mention a few of these in our preview show, looking at Chris Chibnall's old work. I thought some of the humour wasn't best delivered, or I made the point in that preview of saying that sometimes the delivery of the lines wasn't the greatest, but I don't think you can always pin that on the actors, and there's something a little bit missing compared to Moffat and RTD about Chibnall's humour.
I think there was times when some lines are meant to be funny, and I don't know if it's because his humour is very, very dry, but, you know, the bits, I think the bits what you've already picked up with Graham's character were meant to be funny, but just didn't really come over funny. The whole, you know, it's your fault, you know, but now this and that, and then that sort of stuff was meant to be funny, but I don't know, I think the bits with, you know, having no pockets or trying to remember my name sort of bits were meant to be funny, but just, you know, it was beautifully done by Jodie, but I just think they're a bit dry. I see where you're coming from.
it'll be interesting to see how that develops as the series goes on with Chris's scripts, as perhaps we're not looking for too much humour in the first episode of a new era.
Maybe not, but I think, you know, humour is always a good thing in Doctor Who. I think, you know, it's a real good balance to have some, and we will see more humour from like episode 3 onwards, which, you know, is not done by Chris Chibnall. It'll be interesting to see with an actual different writer instead of, you know, because and then maybe next week's, we're not too sure yet, because it's set on a planet, so we're never too sure at the moment.
What do you make of, it was a good chance for us to hear the full theme tune, Al, but the idea of a coming soon trailer of the guest stars, really, not necessarily knowing which numbered episode they're going to be in?
I, like you, would have been quite happy to have that after the episode, you know, sort of, you know, not mixed into the episode, because that's what they did, they sort of mixed it into the end of the episode, basically, and sort of got to a certain point of the theme tune, and it went to Jodie and all the other actors, basically. But I, like you, would have personally much preferred to have got to the end of the episode and then had a trailer like they do straight after the episode. So, you know, because it was a bit jarring to the music, really.
Yes, Alex, shall we give our scores out of 10 for first episode?
I've been sort of debating all. I've watched it 3 times, I have to say that. That's how sad I am. I've watched it 3 times today already, and it looks brilliant. But I've sort of been debating between, do I give it a 10 or a 9.5? Because it was that good, but the music was the only thing putting me off. So I think, because I can't really go on the music, I just really go on acting and the direction and how it looked and the script, I think I am going to give it a 10.
Wowzers, a great one, Al. I was sort of debating, because I was a little disappointed with the pacing issues, you know, as I said, similar to The Power of Three all those years ago now, when Chris wasn't showrunner. Plenty of good things going on. As I said, some of the humour felt a little bit flat in the Chibnall script again. So I was going to go between an 8.5 and a 9, and I think I will go for the 9 overall, just for the fact that it's been done so well. You know, it looks so, so fresh, this show now. It's just what it needed without necessarily knowing what it needed, and it has given me what it needed.
Yeah, I would agree. It just, I can't put my finger on it. I was like you, I love Capaldi and I loved, you know, the whole Stephen Moffat era. But I think it just got to that point last year where I think everybody was going, this needs something new. It needs a new injection. It needs its own time spot. It needs something new to get it off the floor, basically. And I think last night just went, whoom, this is what we can do. This is how we can make it brilliant again. I think if it stays at that whole level for the whole series, you're in for something really good.
Yes, indeed, Al. And as we're a Target podcast, should we put in the little question of how we'd like to perhaps see this story adapted one day in the very far off future if Chris stays for a number of years as showrunners? Any characters' backstories you'd like to see expanded on? Any scenes you'd like to see expanded on?
I'd like to know. I think that whole bit will probably be explained later on. I think the whole Graham, Ryan, sort of Grace family unit would be good to see a bit more, maybe a chapter or two more, because he'd then find out why he doesn't like. Because there seems to be something between Ryan and, I think that's going to build over the series, something between Ryan and Graham, how they don't get on for some reason. What, I think that would be good to be expanded in the, if it did do it as a book, I think.
Yes, I think I'd like to see the thought process of the Doctor falling down through the roof of the train as well.
Yeah, because it's sort of, you know, because of the time length, that would be interesting, because he sort of don't see it. He had that bit on the end of Twice Upon a Time, and then you bangs, he's there in the trains. It would be nice to know what happens between there and then. That would be good, actually.
But I was impressed with myself. I waited for, I think, 6:42 on the clock, and I started to watch the start of Peter's Regeneration, and I timed it perfectly. You know, Jodie started to fall out, and it went into the sting in the end credits, and I pressed the Sky button to get back on the live feed, and it was just coming up to the introduction, the announcer's introduction, so I timed it well this time.
I managed to get back about, Marcus obviously could hear me, so he hit pause on our Virgin box, and yeah. I got through the door. I think I missed about half a minute. That's all I missed. I missed about the first bit where Ryan is just talking to the camera, and that's all I missed. And I paused it again, so I had to go to the toilet because of being away, and I came out and watched it, and I loved every minute of it. I think I was getting a little bit annoyed when the box, when that looked like he was just doing something from Power 3 again, but then it sort of improved into something else, so I was quite really happy with it, and I think it works, and I'm just so happy that it got the 8.2 million people watching it, you know, and I hope it stays that way, because the loss of faith has happened, unfortunately. I think it's great the way it's gone, really, and it's looking good.
Yes, Al, those stunning overnight figures, the best since the David Tennant era, I think.
Well, yeah, I am a little bit sceptical, so I hope it is to do with the fact that it was that great, you know, new drama and all that on the Sunday night. But you sometimes wonder, is it because of all the press coverage, it's having a new female doing it, like all that sort of rubbish, really. But I hope it was mainly people just wanting to see what it was like and enjoyed it and go on to watch the rest of the series.
That's the thing, if it can maintain, you know, somewhere around 7, perhaps, you know, as high as 8, perhaps even higher if it sort of builds up to this standard every week, then it could be a very good era.
Yeah, I think there's a good bit of hope for it, because, you know, luckily there's nothing on against it on any other channel these days, so it's not having to contend with, like it had to, with Strictly, because that's Saturday, and Sunday is a good spot for it. I think, you know, that was, as we know, one of Chris Chignall's things, I have to have in place, I want it on a particular day, and that so far has worked, and I hope it, you know, goes on and gets good 6-7 million. I was personally expecting it to get between 3 and 4, and I saw it's 8.2. I thought, oh god, that's good, that is very good for Doctor Who, because it sort of has dwindled, unfortunately.
Yes, Al, you know, we're both childs of the 80s and the 90s, and we remember before the days of streaming, Sunday afternoons could be quite boring, couldn't they? But now with this back in its spot, it just seems almost perfect for Doctor Who.
It does. We do remember the long Sundays when nothing happened, you know, and you had a couple of options and that was it, and, you know, and then you might have something good on it in the autumn, like, you know, Chronicles of Narnia or Boxes of Lights, and that was about it. Now you've got something on a Sunday night, which you can, what, you know, you've got all these other options as well these days, but, you know, and that's all fixed point when you can actually spend time with your, you know, if you've got a family, and you can actually build up some memories maybe with them, or, you know, get them into Doctor Who, which is always a good thing in my opinion.
And did you hear about this disaster they had with the simulcast in America? They ended up cutting 10 minutes out because they had nearly the exact runtime's worth of adverts. It took them 1 hour 40 minutes to show the episode first of all on the simulcast, but they did show it in full in its proper 9 p.m. slot US time.
Well, it's interesting. Is that why at the end of the episode they didn't get the end music? Because a lot of people I've seen on Facebook and Twitter, they're saying, yeah, we haven't heard the end music yet, so we can't really comment because of the neighbour from America.
Well, apparently I heard they had the old-fashioned, we used to get over here, credit squeeze, and they had somebody on saying, coming up next on this channel, you know, that sort of rubbish you get, so...
Yeah, it was on BBC America in America, and apparently people were saying it got to the end and they put adverts instead of the end credits, apparently.
But someone told me the whole show with the 10 minutes they cut out was 50 minutes, and it was another 50 minutes worth of adverts.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. In the USA, they love their adverts.
Well, you know, so did we for a while, but thankfully the good old BBC.
Yes, it's all on BBC, and they do their own trailers, but they don't take them as long as like a 10-minute advert break. That is why I record everything on ITV, Channel 4, and any channel that has adverts, I record everything, because adverts drive me mad with dramas. It's like, you get 5 minutes of drama and it goes to an advert break.
That's why, as we record this Monday the 8th in the evening in the UK, The Walking Dead returns on Fox tonight, and I record it, and I never start watching it till 9:15, after the 9 o'clock start, so I can just basically fast-forward through each set of adverts.
Yeah, because how many adverts do you get with that one? Because you're watching it on Fox, it must be worse than when it's on Atlanta.
I think it's 3. It's usually one about 15 minutes, one about 30 minutes, and then one about 45 minutes.
Well, that's not too bad, because if you watch anything in Britain these days, you know, we're probably old enough to remember when you watch a drama on ITV, you had 2 advert breaks. Now you get about 6.
Indeed, or they used to show the films with the break for the 10 o'clock news.
Yeah, that used to be it. Now, if you watch any drama on ITV or Channel 4, you get about 6 advert breaks instead of, like, 2. It went from 2, and then I think in the 90s it went to 3, and in the noughties it went to 6 on ITV, and it's just ridiculous. That's why I always Virgin record everything.
Anyhow, Al, episode 2 next week, new director Mark Tondorai, written by Chris Chibnall again. Looks like we're on an alien planet, which looks very much like South Africa from the location filming.
Well, it probably is South Africa, I think, because it looks very much like South Africa, but it still looks beautiful. I think all these sort of the clips we've seen is them sort of running towards some form of pyramid or something. I think it's like that. So it's going to be an interesting one. And it's got a really good cast. It's got Sean Dooley and Art Malik as all really big actors. I think it's going to be an interesting one. I will catch that before the podcast, I think. That'll be when I'm watching it.
Yes, and Susan Lynch is a guest star as well.
You know, I think the actual guest stars for the whole of this season are pretty good.
Yeah, the big one was the Chris Noth, wasn't it? Mr. Big from Sex and the City, and in is it The Good Wife, the show he was in with Alan Cumming, who's also going to be playing King James I in probably the episode around about Guy Fawkes Night, we think. It might be something to do with that plot.
Yeah, it probably will be that. So that is who the American is in that shot, is it? Because we thought it was the guy from Mad Men. We thought it was him, didn't we? John Hannon.
John Hamm, yeah. I think it may well be Chris North's voice.
Chris North, because they do actually sound pretty similar.
But it keeps on ramping up, Al. One thing I do wonder about is apparently season 12 will start filming, as season 11 did, in November, in about a month's time. So I think they'll be keeping that very secret again if there are any departures of the main three companions.
Well, it's an interesting one, because I've heard various rumours, but by the end of this season, it's meant to go from having a full family dust down to one companion again, or Fred, whatever we're calling them. Main rumour was it was going to be Yaz. Well, I don't know, that's never been confirmed never been confirmed. That's why on the certain covers there was pictures of her just with the Doctor, and everybody started going, well, is she going to be the main companion, basically, and nobody's confirmed that yet.
Yeah, so I saw a few tweets saying people are already dreading saying goodbye to some of these companions, so it just goes to show how good a job they've done in introducing them.
I know, it's just it was just really good introductions, you know, because, you know, sometimes it takes a whole episode just to introduce a companion, and with this, they did it in about 10 minutes. The whole bit was, he's in the train, and you knew beforehand because he's seen her as a policewoman, and you knew what, she was Yaz, or she was with Yaz, you know, and she's friends with Ryan because he was at school. That took, like, 5 minutes, and you knew exactly who they were, where they came from, and that was really good. So I think people will be upset if they do a twist like that. The thing is, I don't think Chris Chikkin was actually known for killing off his characters, though. He's not like Jed McKeown, who makes it a stand thing of his drama, like Line of Duty or Bodyguard. A big character always has to go by about episode 3 with him.
How did Doctor Who do up against the Bodyguard for first night figures?
Didn't really well. It did very well for Doctor Who. Doctor Who got 8.9. I think the Bodyguard got 11. So,
was that 11 on the night for the Bodyguard, or overall after a few days?
I think it was a bang on 10 for the actual people watching it, and I think it went to 12 with catch-up, I think.
But people are predicting Doctor Who may get over 10 with the eventual figures.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I think, although it's the 8, I think they said earlier, the 8 is with to the 2 a.m. catch-up slot, so I don't think anything's been added since then. I don't think those first figures were, I guess, right, there were 6-4 actual people watching it like we did, and then another 2 on catch up between sort of 7 and 2 in the morning, I think it was.
Because of the way my brain and all Doctor Who fans' brains work, Al, at times, I know I've been adamantly against Doctor Who ever becoming like a binge series where it's all dropped at once. But now I'm wishing. Now I wish it was. I texted you, didn't I? Say I wish I could watch the remaining 9 now.
I'm the same, but I have a little thing against, you know, the problem is with binge watching on the BBC is that they will put a box set up, but they won't put on the box set audio description. So if you're in my boat, you have to watch it regularly. Like, I've been wanting to watch the whole of Killing Evil Trust, which is a very good drama, it's on the BBC iPlayer as a box set, and you can't do it because they do not have audio description for any of the extra episodes that haven't been aired, basically.
And you said before, is it on Amazon as well, Killing Eve?
No, Killing Eve is on BBC. This is brilliant. Killing Eve is very, very good.
They do have both, don't they? They eventually end up on Amazon or Netflix, so...
They eventually end up on Amazon or Netflix, and they do have all the description there, which is all good. But I'm so glad. You probably saw my face bring about Good Omens with the David Tennant in it. And it is going on BBC Two as well as Amazon Prime, and that will have audio description, so that looks very good.
And what did you make of the audio description for Doctor Who last night, Al? Any improvements they've made since the last series, since Twice Upon a Time? Any concerns you had?
Not really. It was still really, really good. Except, as I've already mentioned in this podcast, one little niggle was when she was in the charity shop. She went into the changing room, and I knew what the costume, because it's been everywhere, and we've discussed it. And she came out, obviously, in the costume, and they didn't say.
Ah, no, you didn't. Oh, that should have been mentioned. That's a
critical
moment in the new Doctor.
It should have been Doctor comes out of the changing room and he's in the blue trousers and, you know, the T-shirt and the jacket. They should have said, but they didn't. I thought, I thought that might have just been an error last night. Well, I've watched it on the iPlayer and it's exactly the same.
Sorry, one of the darkest humour tweets I saw was, just imagine the Doctor, the new Doctor, did all that most of that first adventure wearing Peter Capaldi's pants.
Oh, dearie dear.
You know, I'm trying to think of the intricacies of this, Al. You know, we probably didn't think about this too much, but do they melt? You know, I don't know. Why don't the clothes melt? Do they get singed? But that was to do with being on the battlefield, wasn't it?
Obviously, you know, some regeneration energy doesn't mind fabrics or something, because the old costumes never get burnt or
considering the regeneration.
There's bits on it, but they're normally in some form of state.
Regeneration energy has basically exploded the inside of the TARDIS twice, so fabric must be pretty strong.
Yeah, because it's taken up two TARDISes to get them into HD quality. That's why they do it. But it's like, it kills everything in a TARDIS. Why doesn't it? Now, the other niggle I always have, and I will say this now, is how does the TARDIS change? It's meant to be symbiotically linked to the Doctor when she nicked it, so it's not hers.
Oh, we haven't really discussed it. It wasn't there for the entire episode, so... It was sort of explained what you just mentioned, Al, in the Doctor's Wife episode, where Idris, the embodiment of the TARDIS, the excellent Saran Jones, says, "I always took you where you needed to go." And the suggestion was, I think it was suggested in another line from Neil Gaiman, that it was sort of suggested in a roundabout sort of way that TARDIS had, in fact, chosen the Doctor.
That's a good method, then. Because I always wondered that, because when we do get to see the TARDIS, it will have changed again, I expect.
Sorry to go back to it, Al, the indestructible fabric of Doctor's clothing. I think that would be an interesting target chapter, if a writer could think of that.
Yeah, because, TARDISes get burned, but the fabric stays the same. It's madness, I know.
Is it that hollow clothes idea from Matt Smith's last episode?
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, hollow clothes, that was good, that was.
He was naked in front of Clara's gland, wasn't he? So.
Yes, the great Clara.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files, Season 11 Reviews, we'll be discussing The Ghost Monument, written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Mark Tondorai. Contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter at DW Target Files handle, search Facebook for our podcast page, and leave a message, and please do rate and review us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.